south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. All right, I just want to say a few things about the emails you guys and gals are always sending me. Now, I don't know how many emails the average person gets in their inbox every day. I suppose they're mostly on Facebook, Twaddle, and Instagram. So possibly emails are on the downturn, but I wouldn't know. But I do know I get more emails than the average bear, and I can prove it. You know, I was gone for about a month, away from the coffee fields, that is. And since I have a couple of email accounts, and I was on the road every day, I only got to check my personal accounts. But when I got back to the coffee fields, I kind of dreaded checking my Expat Files account. That would be theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And boy, I do regret having a Gmail account, but I got that a long, long time ago. Around 8 or so years ago now, way before we were thinking about loss of privacy, data theft, hacking accounts, and even ID theft. But luckily, 5 or 6 years ago, when we first started hearing cases of identity theft and stuff, that's when I switched to a private StartMail account, though I hung on to the Gmail account because, well, everybody had it, and that's how they contacted me. So luckily, early on, I got that StartMail account because it's encrypted and all that, and I'd advise you all do the same. Not necessarily StartMail, there's a lot of other ones. Proton Mail, for one. The point is, you can have a Gmail, Hotmail, Yahoo account, whatever, and use it for day-to-day non-critical stuff, but you really do need a private email account for private conversations and connections, you know. And of course, if you're doing any banking, moving data around, or running a business online, you're going to need a personal email account that's encrypted. And it'll cost you maybe $25 or even $50 a year. Remember, if an email is free, it ain't. They're getting something from you, your data. But you knew that already, right? All right, so I got back and had over 700 emails in my Expat Files Gmail account, and not all of them were from exiled Nigerian princes offering to give me half of their inheritance if I just helped them to my bank account number. And like I said before, I read them all, except when it's coming from a person who starts by saying, dearest one, or my beloved, or I notice it's coming from someone with 25 consonants in their name and 2 vowels. I mean, come on, bad first impression, even for an internet scammer. But aside from that, I read them all. And sometimes they're short and sweet, and sometimes like a chapter in a book. And generally, I'll read the ones on the air, big or small, that are quite general enough so that most listeners can get something out of it. But when I get those really specific emails, and I get a lot of those, like, for example, who's the best eye doctor, best hospital or neighborhood or lake, best internet service, helicopter school, strip club, whatever, then they narrow it down to a particular region or city like Managua, Nicaragua. Well, you know, it's of great interest to the person writing the email, but it's of almost no use at all to the general audience who probably don't care one bit about Managua and are interested in Latin America in general. And you know, I'm glad to help people out with that specific stuff, but there's only a very small chance I'm ever going to read that on the air. And there's no way I can write a lengthy response or give justice to practically any email because I'll just end up getting carpal tunnel. I mean, come on, when you write an email yourself, I'm sure you don't kick them out 1,000 words at a crack. Now imagine if you had to reply to sometimes dozens of emails a day. So in lieu of getting carpal tunnel, when I reply, I like to make it short and to the point, as opposed to when I'm blathering on the radio. Then the point sometimes falls down a black hole and gets lost completely. So a lot of your emails just can't be answered in a line or two. That's nowhere enough. So if you need some answers on some specific stuff within your own Plan B scenario, if it's not general enough to be of interest to pretty much the whole audience, it's best to set up a one-on-one phone or Skype consultation with me. And by the way, here's some really good news on that front. I don't know if I've ever mentioned this on the show before, but the famous Bitcoin Dan, who, by the way, was such a fabulous software programmer that Bill Gates himself hired him. And for years, before he came down to my seminar and ended up living permanently in Latin America, he did a massive long-distance commute. Microsoft would fly him back and forth every week from Montreal to Seattle. And after a few years of working for the man a lot of us love to hate, Bill Gates, he decided to quit and start his own thing. And man, did he start his own thing. Anyway, Bitcoin Dan, a libertarian and extreme privacy advocate, hated Skype because, you know, it's part of that whole internet data collection scheme. So anything you've got to say or chat about on Skype is like anything you write into a standard email account or blog, pretty much available to anyone who's got any interest in getting it. And it's out there forever. So Bitcoin Dan said, screw that. And he developed his own alternative Skype and chat system. And man, is it rock solid. It never fails. It never drops out. Unless, of course, there's a lightning strike or a power outage or something. Anyway, Bitcoin Dan gave me that program a couple of years ago, and we always use it to communicate. And he's given me the okay to pass that program around to other people. So if we're doing a one-on-one consult and the information's personal, private, or what you might call classified, I'll just send you the link. You could download the program. And when we do our consult, it'll be done over an end-to-end encrypted system that's virtually untrackable and uncrackable. So for all you guys and gals out there who are thinking of doing a one-on-one consult, but you're also thinking, hell, I don't want to say too much on Skype or even over the phone, don't worry, we got you covered. Not only that, you might remember if you go to www.thenewexpat.com, you can download my consultation questionnaire form. It's pretty thorough. There are a lot of questions on it, some of them quite personal, which makes some people hesitant to fill it out and send it to me with complete information because it's going over the internet, which is, in that case, not to worry either. Because you see, one of my email accounts is through StartMail, which is an encrypted email service. And even if you don't have StartMail, we can send encrypted messages back and forth. So how does that work? Well, for example, if you want to send the questionnaire back to me, you can encrypt it your own way on your end and send me the password so I can open it. That is, if you have your own encryption program on your computer, that's the way some people do it. Or I can just send you an email from my StartMail address. And in your reply to me from that same email, you can click the box that says encrypt this email and it'll come back to me totally encrypted. Either way, these days it's easy to send encrypted info back and forth. So that's a heads up for you listeners who are hesitant to Skype or use the phone. And if you use WhatsApp on your phone, that's even worse. Hey, I'm in a third world country where Big Brother is practically non-existent, yet I'm hesitant to use Skype. Oh, and you'll like this. If we're going to do a consult using Bitcoin Dan's protocol, you get the link to download his software absolutely free. And then if you want to have other completely encrypted conversations with friends and relatives or business associates, whatever, you can just send them the link too. They set up a user profile and now you can talk to them completely encrypted too. And it's all free courtesy of Bitcoin Dan, who, by the way, along with our famous crypto miner, Oscar Miner, will be talking about the latest, greatest breaking news in the crypto world at my upcoming July Expat Insider Seminar, which starts on July 7th. So if you want to join us there, live and in person, check out the info and the sign-up details. Just go to www.thenewexpat.com and click on Johnny's seminar link. Now, speaking of my Expat Insider Seminar, if you remember last week, I mentioned there'll be another special guest, Mr. B, who'll be explaining in detail how he makes 18 to 36 bucks an hour sitting at home on his computer here in Latin America. And you know, it took him a year of living down here looking for his niche before he found it. Actually, as he explains it, it found him. Anyway, talking a little about that on last week's show, I did get a volley of emails. I should have known. I mean, come on. Making 18 to 36 bucks an hour in the States, that's doing all right. But down here in Latin America, those are princely wages. No, not Nigerian princely wages, but princely wages. And man, did that strike a chord with some of the people in this audience. Listen to this email. This one comes from listener Fred. He says, Johnny, you've never done this kind of shit before. Not that I can remember. What I mean is, listening to your show over these past years, you have never, and man, he put capital letters and exclamation marks there, teased people before. But in your last show, you said a guy came down again for the second time to Latin America and found a terrific business niche. And then you stopped and said nothing more about it. So what gives, Johnny? Signed, Fred. All right, Fred, I get it, but I didn't mean to be a tease. Or how about this one from Rodrigo, living up in Canada now, but he's from Venezuela. He says, I'm a Venezuelan listener. In fact, an avid listener to your show. And Johnny, it amazes me how accurately you've dissected the South American experience. I am from Venezuela, so I know what you're talking about. By the way, meet Johnny again. You heard me say in a recent past show that I had my share of Venezuelan listeners. What I mean is people listening from Venezuela, mostly gringos, of course. Most of them were there either doing business or working for, get this, the U.S. Embassy. Yeah, that's right. In every capital city of every Latin country, there is a U.S. Embassy with dozens, sometimes hundreds of employees. In fact, I met tons of them years ago when I do my Latin American morning drive-by and drive-home live radio shows. Yep, they'd invite me to dinner, parties, embassy gigs and stuff. And some of them, by the way, didn't like their jobs at all. As one embassy guy told me, in the morning you arrive and you check your brain at the door. But the pay was great. And man, those guys could dish out the dirt. Anonymously, of course. I'm sure that some of that stuff, if I talked about it on the show, would earn me a drone with my name on it. Anyway, as mentioned, I had my share of gringos in Venezuela who were listeners. Some of them had been living large and cheap in Venezuela for a long, long time. But now, I don't hear from them at all, as if they'd fallen off the radar. Except I still get emails from Venezuelan nationals who are living up in the States and Canada. So, yes, I had regular Venezuelan listeners too, ones that weren't gringo, but native Latins. Which brings us back to Rodrigo, a Venezuelan who flew to Coop and is now living in Canada. He, too, was extremely intrigued when I mentioned on my last show that $18 an hour, sit at home on your ass, I mean, on your computer job. And actually, according to Mr. B, the bonuses come in at about double that. Anyway, Rodrigo says, Johnny, I'm not looking to go back to South America at all. After my Venezuelan experience, I have sort of an allergy to the place now. But I was wondering if I could pay you for the information you shared in your podcast about this online job that pays 18 bucks an hour. I wouldn't mind doing that while visiting or living in, let's say, Thailand or even Portugal. Then he says, cheers, Johnny, and many thanks. Rodrigo, Toronto, Canada. All right, along with Rod's and Fred's email about that little business niche that found Mr. B just recently, there's no mystery about it, but the thing is, it needs some explaining. And of course, Mr. B will be doing that and answering questions at the seminar. And I think after that, I'll try to get him to write up a little checklist. I can pass it around to everyone who's interested in trying it themselves. Now, just to clarify things a little, it's for people who speak Canadian or U.S. English perfectly. That'd be almost everyone in this audience, right? They'd want you to have a college degree, but you don't need one. And what you're doing is teaching Chinese kids English online. And the company or companies, and there's a number of them, get you the students, they give you the syllabus. That in itself is great, but the beauty of it is that unlike so many other ways to make money online, where you have to buy a course, you know, spend $200, $300, $500, even $1,500 to learn how to sell products on eBay, Amazon, or Fakebook. I mean, that is all the rage right now, right? And this is just simply teaching English to Chinese students. Now, you know, the Chinese have over 1.5 billion people. And the fact is, the best way to learn any language is from a native speaker. That's why I always tell gringos and expats, it's a bad idea to learn your Spanish from a gringo whose first language is English, because they'll teach it to you from a book. And it stands to reason. No language is strictly from the book. It's ever-changing and flexible, especially on the street, in conversations. And when you learn by the book, you never learn the general or local street slang in common usage. Which is why when I learned French in high school and went over to France, filled with confidence and ready to babble with the frogs, they just gave me the cold shoulder and pretty much told me to shut up. Yep, a real ego-deflating experience, let me tell you. So anyway, you want to learn any language from a native speaker. Of course, there are always exceptions, but that's a pretty solid general rule. So anyway, the Chinese are the up-and-coming power. They got all the money these days. In fact, when I was traveling for the last month in and around Europe, I'd ask the locals what's changed over the last few years. And they'd say, besides the illegal Muslim hordes pouring in, there are a lot less American tourists and a lot more Chinese. Because they've got the money. They've got more millionaires than any country. So as the U.S. economy, its power, its manufacturing base, etc., dwindles, China is the new powerhouse and continues to grow. And because in the rest of the Western world, English is the main language and China's main market, all Chinese people now want their kids to learn English. And since the very best way to learn it is from a native English speaker, and there aren't very many native English speakers in China at all. The fact is, China's a good place to visit as a tourist, but gringos and expats do not see it as their plan B destination. So Chinese kids that are trying to learn English at school in their homeland are learning it like I learned my French. they don't want to learn it from a Chinese person speaking English. They want to learn it from a native, creating a nice new niche for gringos and expats. Now, the thing is, there are lots of scammers on the internet, you know, and companies that are, well, not what they're represented to be. Which is why it's so cool that Mr. B has been able to sort this out for us. As mentioned in the last show, $18 an hour is what the average Latin person makes in a day. So in effect, when you're teaching English to Chinese kids, you're making 8 to 10 times the average Latin American minimum wage. And from what Mr. B says, the downside is you got some pretty crappy hours, because when your clients, your Chinese kids, are awake, it's the third shift for us here in the Western time zones. And that's something to get used to. All right, so that's the gig in a nutshell. And for all you listeners out there who want more info, the ones that aren't coming to the seminar, that is, I'll ask Mr. B to put together a checklist that I can send out to you guys, okay? But that won't be coming till after the seminar. Plus, I'll work it out so you can talk to Mr. B directly. So there you have it. Bottom line, it's a boon for expats and gringos who have to make some money right off the get-go when they get down here. And from what Mr. B says, the market is expanding like crazy. Since it's the goal of practically every Chinese kid, and their parents, of course, to learn English. All right, enough said about that. Which brings us to an email from a seminar repeat offender. Yep, we get a lot of those. In fact, every single seminar I've ever given now for the past 8 years has had at least a few repeat offenders, and the seminar coming up is no exception. And you know, when people first hear about me, or first hear my show, or hear about my seminars, they say, paying a couple $1,000 for a week-long seminar in Latin America, how can that be worth it? I can go on the internet and look up expat stuff and go into the blogosphere and find out everything I need to know about Latin America. Hey, I hear that from people once in a while, especially from backpackers. So what's my response? Well, it's quite simple. I just tell them exactly what I just told you. I say every single one of my expat seminars, except for the first one, because it was the first one and there would be no repeaters, right? But for everyone since then, I've had repeat offenders. And why would they spend the money to come back again if it didn't have tremendous value? Meanwhile, I've run into a lot of people who've gone to international living seminars in Panama and Costa Rica and such, and every last one of them said it was all right, but they wouldn't go back. Oh, and by the way, some people come back to my seminar for thirds. So to the doubters, I say, how do you explain that? Which brings us back to this email from one of our repeat offenders. And I'll paraphrase as usual and add comments wherever, because I just can't help myself. She says, Johnny, can you bring up housing for disabled on your radio show? You discuss a lot about building a home, but I can't remember you discussing housing for someone who's disabled. Certain things apply across the board for everyone, disabled or not. And certain things, such as having a bathroom you can roll a wheelchair into, are probably things that you can do when building your own home. I get that. Number one, homes should have a full bathroom and bedroom, or a space to convert a room into a bedroom, on the first floor. Too often I've seen people suffer because they don't have the space to put a bed and they can't clean themselves because they don't have a full shower on the first floor. Number two, a full bathroom needs a shower that people can step into rather than a bathtub that people have to step over to have access to the shower. Also, it would be nice to have a full bench where you could put your leg up rather than a bench that just has enough room for a person's behind. There also needs to be support bars in the shower and by the toilet to help people lift themselves up. Another essential ingredient would be a removable shower head, preferably 9 feet or longer. Sure, it has some length, but you need that to get to all your body parts. Furthermore, the toilet seat needs to be higher than a traditional toilet so people can get up and down more easily. Ideally, the bathroom should be big enough to easily maneuver a wheelchair. Other things to consider, of course, are ramps to get in and out of the home. And, of course, doors wide enough to accommodate a wheelchair. And levers rather than doorknobs, because they're far easier to use, especially with people who have arthritis. The other thing I think you should mention is where, ideally, people who are disabled should live in Latin America. Then she says, I haven't seen any scooters around, but I'm told they do exist in Argentina. And finally, Johnny, how do people who are disabled get the handicap sticker for the car so they can park in disabled parking places at malls and grocery stores, etc.? All right, then let's try to hit on that stuff. If you think you need some authorized handicap parking sticker, you'd be wrong. Fact is, if you're handicapped, you just park in a handicapped spot. And even though parking lots have rent-a-cops, most of them have just enough brain power to lift and lower the gate to let you in and out. Now, being that we all have gringo sensibilities, if someone who isn't handicapped parks in one of those spaces, and I've seen that happen down here plenty of times, you feel like going up to them and say, hey, get the hell out of there. But that's a gringo thing. You know, Latins are non-confrontational and are used to bending, even breaking laws themselves. I mean, you should see how they drive. I mean, really, it's not a normal day in Latin America if you don't see a bunch of people running red lights and stop signs. People are used to that. Even the cops don't give out tickets for that stuff. So you think they're going to press the handicap parking spot issue? However, since us gringos and expats are quite sensitized to the handicap problem, if you're handicapped and you feel you must have a sticker, just go on the internet, search handicap stickers, print one out, have it laminated, and stick it in your car. Or I suppose if you really want to try to make it legal, you could go to your lawyer and have them notarize a little document that says you are truly handicapped. Then you could keep that in your glove compartment if you ever feel you're going to need to use it. That, along with your own laminated handicap sticker, is about 1,000% overkill. But if you want to cover every single base, well, that's the way to do it. Oh, and by the way, if you go down to the police department or a municipality to get such a sticker, I'll bet you a Bitcoin they won't have one on hand, nor will they know where to send you to get one either. And truthfully, I've been down in Latin America for many years, and I think I've seen only 3 or 4 handicap stickers on vehicles in that whole time. Now, what I've just said pertains to living off the gringo tourist trail, or slightly off the trail. Whereas if you live on the gringo tourist trail, where gringos have infiltrated most heavily, there could be the odd case that they've pushed the local municipality to require such stickers. So maybe in certain parts of Costa Rica, Mexico, Colombia, and Panama, they might have them available and even enforce the law. But I doubt it, because I've been around and I've never even heard anyone discuss such a thing. So then, what about the best places for handicapped people to live? I'd say absolutely it's got to be in the Altiplano. Why? Because one of the banes of being handicapped is you're often in bed or in a wheelchair for extended periods of time and you don't want to be in a constant sweat mode. And since more than 90% of Latin America is dead hot, that'd be the lower elevations, the beach areas, the coasts, that's where a handicapped person would be the most miserable. And the Altiplano, with constant spring-like weather all year round, that's where a handicapped person would be most comfortable. Not too hot, not too cold. Though that doesn't mean if you're handicapped, you can't live comfortably on or near a beach, but you're going to have to run the air conditioning practically all the time. And that could definitely break the bank. Then again, if you've got the dough, you could live pretty much anywhere. Even so, you'll be going shopping, to the malls, out and about, and you'll be in and out of the air conditioning, and when you're out, you'll be dead hot and certainly sweating all the time. Now, as far as an actual home for the disabled, in Latin America, there certainly are nursing homes, but they cater to the locals. They're low budget, I mean ultra low budget, and no place a gringo or an expat would want to hang out for any length of time at all. Now, there are some upscale adult care facilities, which of course would accept handicapped people all day long. You know, they've got nurses and doctors on duty, wide open spaces, pools, and activities. In fact, they're just starting to pop up now. And there's one very good example I came across in particular in Colombia. Again, it's in the Altiplano. It looks like a very nice facility. In fact, in a future show, I think I'm going to go more in depth into this place, translate to Spanish, and lay it all out for you. Because you see, to be a resident at this particular place, and it's high end, will cost you between around $1,400 to $2,000 a month. Everything included. That'd be your medical care, housing, food, activities, everything. But it's too much to go into right now. We'll hit on it in a future show. And as mentioned, this is an adult care facility for adults and for the handicapped. But the interesting thing is that although these places are based on and are targeted at gringos and expats that might want to come down and live in a high-end adult care facility on basically a Social Security check, well, that's not quite how it's turning out. The actual written information, I've got it right here, says, listen to this, and I'll translate. The majority of our residents are adults over 50 years old. And with our 44 individual units, we have 15 Colombian residents from the United States who are now retired and receiving pensions and who have moved back down to our facility in Colombia. Then it says the rest of our residents are from the following places: Holland, Venezuela, Argentina, and Canada, though principally our residents are from Colombia. So get this, we're talking about exactly the kind of adult care facility a gringo up in the States might be looking for, because you heard what the cost is per month. about as much as your average Social Security check, or a little more. Yet even in this home, which is probably the highest-end facility in all of Colombia, they've got, as of this article written in 2017, zero homegrown gringos living there. So it turns out the really smart ones were the Colombians living up in the States. Who knew? Their pensions would get them nothing but a putrid, vomit-tinged crap hole facility up in the States. Whereas they knew that same dough would get them into a nice, pleasant, even excellent facility in Colombia. By the way, those Colombians who formerly lived in the States don't count as real gringos, you know. So it's true, places like that exist, but gringos have no idea they're out there. Which is a shame because, you know, a facility like that up in the States would easily cost $6,000 to $10,000 a month. And really, who do you and I know that could afford that? So anyway, if you listeners want the link to this place, just send me an email, theexpertfiles@gmail.com. I'll hook you up. You can read all about it. However, you'll have to run it through a translation program because it's all in Spanish. All right, then what about individual homes in Latin America that are all set up for a handicapped person? Well, unfortunately, you'll only find handicapped access, as you know it up in the States, at U.S.-style franchises like McDonald's and Wendy's, because those franchises throughout the world are standardized to U.S. building codes. And you'll also see good handicapped access and facilities in brand new upscale subdivisions and malls. Most architects and builders are following first world regs when it comes to brand new buildings. However, as for your own living quarters, you're on your own. You have to do the modifications yourself. So if you're handicapped, I would say your best bet, if you're not going to build a house yourself, is buy or rent an existing one-story house, get a local young architect in, and have him remodel the place based on first world handicapped access guidelines. And how much would that cost? Well, just remember, the architect and the labor will be dirt cheap, but if you need specialty items like a taller, wider toilet, whatever, you'll pay more than you would in the U.S. for the same item. Because remember, it's got to get imported from the States or elsewhere, meaning China. However, all that stuff's readily available. Every medium and large-sized Latin city has a couple of large medical retail outlets that carry all kinds of handicap stuff, even scooters. In fact, every one of the 3,000-plus Walmarts down here have electric scooters for the handicapped. So things like that are available, and anything you can't get, you can order it from Amazon. However, I believe if you are handicapped, in a wheelchair, mostly immobile, whatever, the best place for your Plan B is the Altiplano in Latin America, because it's important to remember, you could have a full-time live-in nurse for $400 to $500 a month, and she'll be your cook, maid, and go shopping for you, too.
You've been listening to the Expat Files Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, you can schedule a one-on-one phone call with me. But first, download my free Plan B questionnaire at www.thenewexpat.com. Better yet, if you want to get your Plan B going from right up there in the States, just sign up for my 9-hour Expat Essentials course. Get the perfect Plan B blueprint by going to theexpatfiles.com/academy. Nos vemos.